950 KTRS. Hello, I am Paul Harris. Thanks for tuning in for the final regularly scheduled edition of this show. Max Voisey is here in the studio with me, and it is time for us to turn our attention to showbiz, as we do every week at this time. I've got a movie. Max has a couple of movies, and let's just jump into one of them. We should point out that we are now in the month of February, which is one of the 2 months of the year that are not known for great movies, right?
It's true. It's true. Normally, they try to release a romantic comedy or something for the ladies right around this week because Valentine's Day is coming up. The last 3 years have been dominated by a franchise known as the 50 Shades of Grey opus.
Yep.
Now, Paul, I know you're a big fan of these books. You've read them multiple times.
No.
Okay. I know you're a big fan of the movies. You've seen them all multiple times.
No.
Okay. Well, I have not read the books. However, I have seen all three of these movies.
Really? Because,
well, after all, it's my job, Paul. It's what I have to do.
Oh, okay.
And I do think, without getting into...
You're going to stick with that story, huh?
Without getting into minutia or trivia that people don't care about, I think it's important to remind people where this book series and now film franchise came from. This started as Twilight fan fiction. E.L. James, who is a pen name, by the way, the author, started a blog where she would write fan fiction. And what this is, Paul, is this is something very popular online where people pick different fandoms like James Bond or Harry Potter and Star Wars, and they write their own versions of what would have happened.
Okay.
Well, Han Solo does this, and they're very popular.
I know that there was this sort of stuff going back to the 60s with the Star Trek original series.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Probably before that with
right.
comic books.
Yeah, exactly. And so fan fiction is still huge, even more so now because of the internet. So
have you ever seen it? Any of it?
I have tried to read some of it, but it infuriates me and I get very angry. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the actual Star Wars makes me angry. Why do I want to read somebody in Oregon who's saying Han shot first? I think it's kind of ridiculous, but it's very popular. And of course, Twilight was very popular with older women. And so the one older woman wrote her own version of Bella and Edward, who of course was the vampire and the young girl that he fell in love with. A little creepy because he's hundreds of years old and she's a high school girl, but whatever. And she substitutes vampirism for bondage and S&M, and that's where you get 50 Shades of Grey. But Christian and Anastasia are pretty much Edward and Bella. The two books, the 50 Shades of Grey and the first Twilight book, are very similar because it's the same story. She's just retelling it. She only published these online. They got very popular. She e-published them. A major publisher came along, and the rest is history. She wrote some follow-up
millions
books.
Of copies
millions
of, books.
Of copies.
Tens of
books.
Millions, maybe.
In the UK, here in the States, it was a massive success for her. Her two follow-up books were written hastily, and yes, they also follow the rest of the Twilight books. If you've read the Twilight books or seen those movies, you know that they get married and have kids, and that's well, same thing in this series too. You kind of know where it's going, but once again, take out fangs and put in handcuffs.
Okay.
So the first movie is going to come out a couple of years ago, and they get a female director for it who goes on the press tour to say, we're going to elevate this material, which was a disguised way of saying, this is a bad book, and I'm going to do my best. And that first movie came out, and it was trying to be elegant, but just, quite frankly, it came across as boring and kind of cold, and it didn't have a lot of that sensuality that people, I think, loved from that book. It still did very well, though, because of the curiosity of the audience. The tagline to that series was even, are you curious? And so it did very well. They ended up signing all the actors for a trilogy. They had another snag, though, when the director left, and they hired a different director to come in who wanted to change up the elegance of that first movie and make it more like a late night Cinemax movie. Mm-hmm. And play up the more ridiculous absurdities of this horrible, horrible plot. And as it turned out, the sequel released last year, 50 Shades Darker, was a lot more fun. Not saying it's a good movie, not saying I gave it a good review, but I had a lot of fun with it because it embraced its late night extravagance.
Cinemaxness.
You had Kim Basinger show up and chew scenery, and it was a whole lot of fun. So I sort of was cautiously optimistic for this third one, which is released today. It's called 50 Shades Freed.
And by the way, the tagline for this is, don't miss the climax.
I like it.
You see how clever we are in the agency?
Clever. Oh. Unfortunately, this movie is anticlimactic.
I see. I can do that too, ad agency.
Unfortunately, Jamie Dornan, who plays Christian Grey, and Dakota Johnson, who plays Anastasia
That'd
Steele.
That'd be Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith's daughter.
And her, she sounds just like her mom. They don't get along in real life. They don't like one another. Now, it's not the first time that people who have co-starred in a movie haven't liked one another. I mean, I can think about TV shows like Moonlighting, where they have great chemistry, but they don't get along, or even early episodes of the X-Files. But yes, they had to do these three movies. They don't really get along. It's been impossible for me to shake that thought when I see them making out and doing more in these movies, because I'm like, boy, they must have just stormed off to their trailers because they don't like one another.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this review and you want to know what the plot is, Convoluted doesn't really do 50 Shades Freed justice. Apparently, Anastasia's ex-boss, who she got fired for coming on to her, is now deranged and has a gun and tries to kidnap her. But he also has heretofore unknown connection to Christian Grey that is adding almost memento-like element to this movie. It's just a head-scratcher, and it's just kind of goofy. Thankfully, the movie doesn't care too much about that. This movie really ratchets up the element of sex and sexuality. The first two films were actually criticized for not having a lot of lovemaking scenes. This one has a ton. Mm-hmm. I think because they know, well, this is it. We're not going to make any more, so we better give the audience what we think they want. Paul, I saw the first one at a press screening with a bunch of sort of uptight press people who, of course, didn't like it. I didn't like it either. The second year, last year, I missed the press screening, so I had to pay to see 50 Shades Darker. I ended up being the only man who was there single, and I walked up to the very last row with all these other women on all of their girlfriend parties staring at me like, who is this creep in the long black coat? I wanted to tell everybody, I'm working. I'm here for work.
Right.
I didn't want to repeat that this week, Paul, but yes, I had a previous commitment. I missed the press screening again. So just last night at a 10 o'clock show, I paid for a ticket and I saw this again with the opening night crowd. Now, I was coming from another location, and I thought I was going to be late, so I stopped and got a fast food burger on the way there, and woofed it down really quick, and got inside as the credits were about to roll, the lights were down. I thought, nobody can see me. This is great. I'm just gonna, nobody's gonna, look at me strange. And I sat down, and as the credits are rolling and 50 Shades Freed is starting, I start to get a rumbly in my tummy.
Oh no!
And my first thought is, I better undo my belt, so I can kind of relax here. And I thought, I can't.
No, not in this movie. There'll be no touching your pants.
Exactly. So I had to sit there uncomfortable for the whole movie because I wasn't at Guardians of the Galaxy. I wouldn't have thought twice. But I'm like, there's no way I'm coming in here solo and unbuttoning my pants.
Yeah, by the way, also don't do that at the Emoji Movie or any place where there are a lot of kids.
So, this is a
Mommy, what's that man doing? Honey, don't look.
This is a very strange...
Not a smiley face.
This is a very strange franchise that I'm a little shocked they made all three of the movies, but they always do very well at the box office. I'm not sure it'll be fondly remembered, except maybe in a sort of ironic way. Like, can you believe that we read these books and we watched these movies? It's fine. It's certainly not as fun as the second film. It's better than the first one. But when it was all over, when they do the big montage at the end to say, look what a journey we've had with these characters, you might be sitting there going, is that all there is?
Mm. That is anticlimactic,
exactly.
By definition.
Yeah.
Scale of 0 to 10?
I will give this a 5. It's just fine for what it is.
Okay. Will it do big box office?
I think it will. The other two did, and it was pretty packed when I was there not fiddling with my belt.
Will the box office be big enough that they say that this is the end of the series, but it won't be?
Well, here's the thing. There is a fourth book. E.L. James, of course, wrote a... it's funny. I started the review saying this was a fan fiction version of Twilight. That's where these books came from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Stephanie Meyer, the author of Twilight, had plans for a book from Edward the Vampire's point of view, and it was going to be called Midnight Sun. She wrote a little bit of it, lost interest in it, never published it. What does E.L. James do? She publishes a book from Christian Grey's point of view.
Okay.
And so there is a fourth book out. Jamie Dornan, who plays this character, says, under no circumstances am I coming back for that fourth book.
Okay. Speaking of Jamie Dornan, and let me ask this about him and Dakota Johnson, has this success of this series helped them get other work?
It has helped Dakota. She had her own rom-com called How to Be Single. She has a lot of projects in the works. It's put her on the map, of course. Her parents help as well because people are familiar with them. So, yes, it's done wonders for her career. Jamie Dornan, not so much. He is critically enjoyed, I suppose, because he did that show with Gillian Anderson called The Fall, which is streaming right now. But I don't see a lot of things on the horizon for him.
What I'm hearing is in 2 years, he'll be coming back saying, I'm ready for the fourth movie.
Could be.
Yeah. All right. 5 out of 10 from Max for 50 Shades Freed. Now, the movie I'm going to tell you about this weekend is called Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool. And the film star in question is the woman who sang this in the musical Oklahoma.
I'm just a girl who can't say no. I'm in a terrible fix. I always say, come on, let's go. Just when I ought to say nix.
I'll tell you, it was interesting watching this video online today in the Me Too era and comparing the lyrics to how they would have to change it if Oklahoma were not made in 1957, but in 2018. The woman who's singing there is Gloria Graham, who was in that scene with Shirley Jones, who played Laurie in the movie. Gloria Graham was 8-0 Annie, and she sang I Can't Say No. It's probably her best-known role, even though it is exactly the kind of role she had not been doing before. This is a woman who had been Oscar-nominated for a film noir called Crossfire in 1947 and won a Best Supporting Actress Oscar in 1952 for a movie called The Bad and the Beautiful.
Okay.
Now comes a movie about the end of Gloria Graham's life. It's called Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, and it stars Annette Bening as Graham in her late 50s when she's been diagnosed with breast cancer but won't get treatment. Instead, she goes to England to do a play and meets a young man named Peter, who is 30 years younger. They quickly develop chemistry that leads to a love affair until she is sick enough to need help and asks Peter to let her move into his parents' home in Liverpool, where his mother can take care of her. And they're thrilled because they know who she is. She was a star 20 years ago, so they're thrilled to have her there. From there, the timeline of the movie zigzags between the family she shares a home with in Liverpool to her relationship with her own mother and sister, from her home in Malibu, California, to a hotel room in New York. Through it all, the story doesn't move much beyond this May-December romance, and it doesn't make enough of Graham's turbulent life. This is a woman who had 4 children and 4 husbands, the last of which was the son of her second husband. And the rumor mill says she'd been messing around with him since he was 13.
Oh, my Lord.
She acted in movies with stars like Humphrey Bogart and Henry Fonda and Joan Crawford and Lee Marvin. Not enough of that is in this movie. Now, I will say that the cast is okay. It includes the 2 stars of Billy Elliot, Jamie Bell, who is just fine as the Englishman that Gloria has a relationship with, and the always solid Julie Walters as his mother. I loved her in Educating Rita with Michael Caine back in 1983. And she's done a lot of stuff, including, I believe, a Harry Potter character.
Yeah, she's Ron Weasley's mom, yeah.
There you go. But this film belongs to Annette Bening, who gives a gloriously vulnerable performance as Gloria Graham. She allows herself to be seen on screen with wrinkles and without makeup. She has said in the past, Annette Bening, that she used Gloria Graham's on-screen bad girl reputation in the 40s as an inspiration for the con woman character that she played in the movie The Grifters.
This is an amazing movie.
Wonderful, with John Cusack and Angelica Houston. If you haven't seen that, put that on your Netflix queue, The Grifters. Check it out when you can. So this completes a nice circle for Annette Bening. And watching her on screen, I couldn't help but think of the difference in how actresses of a certain age are cast today versus all those years ago. Because here's Annette Bening, who is going to be 60 in a few months, still at the top of her game, still gets lots of regular work, still does interesting movies, gets good roles.
Gets nominations.
And here she is playing Gloria Graham, a woman who couldn't get much of anything once she'd reached her late 30s. They just didn't cast women of a certain age in movies in her era. It's also interesting to see a movie about a romance between an older woman and a younger man, considering the overwhelming majority of such relationships on screen that are the other way around. Now, all that being said, unfortunately, Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, the movie, doesn't give us much besides this vivid acting lesson you get from Annette Bening. And you get a lot of morose scenes of Gloria Graham contemplating life in the year or two before she died at age 57. I would much rather have seen a biopic about Gloria Graham in her heyday, when she was dating and marrying all these men and getting involved in scandals and working with all these other legends, Olivia de Havilland and many, many others of that era. She was a pretty well-known star. You know, you get nominated for an Oscar and then you win one. That's pretty remarkable. So I'm giving the movie a 5 out of 10.
Okay.
Film stars don't die in Liverpool.
So what you're saying is it's as good as 50 Shades Freed.
It's right about there, but without the Cinemax quality to
okay.
it. So that there is a couple of movies. We've got more to do here in just a couple of minutes, but first somebody's walked in here with a cake for us.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Paul, if I would have known this was going to happen, I would not have kept the secret, so I did not know.
Well, thank you. Mark Dorsey, the general manager, and the rest of the staff here have come in with a lovely chocolate chip cookie cake, which I appreciate very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll continue to stay in touch and maybe do things in the future. I'm looking forward to all of that.
See you Monday.
No, there's another guy working Monday. I don't know if you heard. Thank you all very much, and we'll be right back after this on the Big 550 KTRS. We're continuing along with the showbiz stuff. If you missed the first segment, Max gave a 5 out of 10 to 50 Shades Freed, and I gave 5 out of 10 to Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, which is, you know, a Plaza Frontenac, Tivoli kind of movie. And then Max has another movie that's opening today that we have not been able to see because there were no screenings of it, and we couldn't go see because they didn't have Thursday night screenings of it. And yet it's a new Clint Eastwood movie. What do you know about this?
Very strange. It's called The 1517 to Paris. This is the new movie directed by Clint Eastwood, and he does something that I think is kind of ill-advised. It's not unlike a movie called Act of Valor a couple of years ago, which was a military movie with actual military veterans.
Oh, yeah, with the SEALs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did think that one was interesting, but of course nobody would accuse those gentlemen of being actors. They are military soldiers, yes, and they added realism to that movie, but again, they were not actors. 1517 to Paris tells the true story of soldiers who thwarted a terrorist attack on the train, of course, that was headed towards Paris. And what Eastwood decided to do was to cast Alex Skarlatos and Spencer Stone as themselves. And so while, of course, these are heroes who saved lives, and hats off to them, seeing the clips and seeing the trailers, which unfortunately is the only thing I can go on because they decided not to screen this for critics, it looks pretty painful to watch them try to banter and act.
Mm.
If you were to make the Max Foisy story, I probably shouldn't be cast as Max Foisy. I'm not an actor.
Yeah.
And the naturalism that you need
Did you ever see the Jackie Robinson story?
This is
starring Jackie Robinson?
That's exactly what John Grayson brought up.
Or The Greatest, starring Muhammad Ali.
And so it turns out they do have a supporting cast of actual actors. You've got Judy Greer. You've got Jenna Fischer, of course, from St. Louis. And this is Clint Eastwood's shortest film that he has directed. It's only 90 minutes.
Mm.
So
wait a second. We always say that's the perfect time for a movie.
Well, he got this one in. I think it's technically 94 minutes, but you take off credits and it's going to be under 90 minutes. The 1517 to Paris is playing right now at a theater near you, and I'm interested to see it. I might have done a double feature last night had it been playing.
Yeah, I was thinking of going and see it last night if I could find it. I looked at maybe a dozen different movie theaters in the area and could not find it. And that tells you something about the movie studios.
Especially because it's Clint Eastwood.
Confidence in the movie, yes.
Coming after American Sniper and coming after Sully. I mean, this is his third in a row of American heroes, and yet they're not even screening it for anyone.
Yeah, that's very, very odd. And it got dumped in the middle of February, which tells you something as well.
Going up against the number one movie for Valentine's Day. I mean, it's going to get buried by 50 Shades.
1517 to Paris. Okay, we haven't seen it, so we can't give you a rating on it, but there's the bottom line. Now let's talk about a DVD that my wife and I watched a few days ago, and the only reason we got it is because of the man who stars in it. Do you know the name Harry Dean Stanton?
Of course. You're talking about Lucky.
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. Harry Dean Stanton, who died last year at the age of 91, is a guy whose career included Cool Hand Luke and Kelly's Heroes, Alien and the Green Mile, Repo Man and Escape from New York, and he was the father in Pretty in Pink, the John Hughes movie with Molly Ringwald. He played Molly Ringwald's father. This guy made over 100 movies and at least 4 dozen, maybe 5 dozen TV episodes.
I believe his last work was actually this year on Showtime's Twin Peaks revival. He was a trailer park manager who showed up in a handful of episodes, and he was phenomenal. He played his guitar, and he was basically just Harry Dean Stanton the whole time.
Well, this movie, Lucky, is his last movie,
right,
which he made at age 90. Now, most people who get to age 90 are on the downhill side of life, and he died less than a year after the movie was released. But in the movie, he plays a guy who is essentially Harry Dean Stanton, a guy who wakes up in the morning, does some exercises in his underwear, lights up a cigarette, one of many he's going to have that day because he is a chain smoker. He walks around. He goes to the diner to have a cup of coffee and talk to the owner and some other people who know him there. Later on, he goes to a bar. He walks through the town past some big saguaro cacti, and then he goes home. And then the next day, he pretty much does the same thing. And that's really all the movie is. You could call it a character study, but it's really just here. Here's Harry Dean Stanton. Watch him doing all of these pedestrian things. And the thing about it is, he's always been one of those characters I've been drawn to on screen. He always stood out. I mean, I can still remember his character in Cool Hand Luke. It was just so impressive in a cast that included Strother Martin and Paul Newman and George Kennedy and many others. He just stood out from that crowd, and he did that in pretty much every movie he did. Even if you looked at it and you went, oh, it's Harry Dean Stanton, and he's playing Harry Dean Stanton, who he did in over 100 movies. Well, now he's really playing himself, but the character they call Lucky, and that's who everybody knows him as. And that's essentially the movie. I can't give it a great recommendation one way or the other because there's nothing in it that makes you go, hey, this is fantastic, or hey, this is horrible. It is what it is. But if you
have affection for him,
yes, then you might want to see this. I'm not saying it's a must-see by any means. But again, I think you put it right. If you have affection for Harry Dean Stanton, the actor, you may want to go rent Lucky, which is out now on DVD and might be on one of the streaming services. I didn't look. Okay, that takes us to something that is on a streaming service.
Yes.
A new Netflix movie that got a surprise introduction just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams loves the mystery box. He loves surprising people. He likes to keep his projects close to his vest. He surprised people before with projects like Super 8, and of course, he was producer for Lost, and he really enjoys playing with expectations for the audience. Back in 2008, he released a trailer for his movie Cloverfield, except we didn't know that was what it was called for months because the trailer had no release date information, it had no actors listed, and it had no title. It just had a monster screaming and buildings coming down and people running for their lives, and it said coming soon. This set the internet on its ear back in 2008 because there was no, like, you know, Paramount Studios or here's the name or here's a release date, and it drummed up a lot of information. Once a poster which featured a decapitated Statue of Liberty, and it had the title Cloverfield. Well, that name is sort of a misnomer. It kind of means nothing. What does that name mean? The movie was a pretty big hit. It was a found footage film back in 2008, and it had a monster Godzilla-like, you know, just sort of destroying a city. When the movie ended, you didn't have any kind of answers about where the monster came from or what exactly happened. Then about, I want to say it was about 2012, maybe 2013, 2 months or 3 months before a movie was released, they said, here's a movie called 10 Cloverfield Lane with John Goodman and Mary Elizabeth Winstead coming out.
Winstead,
where John Goodman is a survivalist who has a bunker and he's keeping her hostage, but he says it's for her protection because there's something happening on the outside.
Right.
We didn't know the movie was even shot. We didn't know it was coming out. Why did it have Cloverfield in its name? Turns out we couldn't really find a whole lot of connection to the 2008 movie, but J.J. Abrams assured us that it was connected in some way. Then we started hearing rumblings and rumors about a third Cloverfield movie. As I was watching the Super Bowl, you saw a space station in space, and there said there's a trailer for a new science fiction movie, and after the trailer was over, they said the Cloverfield Paradox will debut on Netflix right after the game.
Mm-hmm.
So they've gone from giving us a trailer with no info months before a film came out to debuting a trailer only weeks before a film came out to telling us hours before the film came out. It was about a 4-hour window letting people know this movie existed.
Okay, but
that's,
you know,
incredible.
What? Sometimes that's a good idea for something that's streaming online, because how many times have you heard such and such is coming out online next month, and then you completely forget?
I'll tell you what I did, Paul. When the Super Bowl was over, I went over to Netflix and I watched The Cloverfield Paradox. I liked those first two Cloverfield films, and they have their flaws, but I liked them mainly. And I thought, okay, I'll watch the third one. I would have gone to the theater to see it. I would have put it on my calendar. But you're right. Knowing, hey, it's coming out right now, I might as well stream it. I bet a lot of people did that.
Even if they didn't watch it that night, I bet they added it to their Netflix queue. Because once Netflix puts it out there, boom, people, my list, plus.
Yeah.
And they add it there.
So this one tries to bridge the gap between the first Cloverfield film and the second, and it does have a lot of connective tissue. It's revealed that the space station that these people are on in the future is called Cloverfield. So that we finally know from 2008, it's taken us this long to figure out where that title comes from. It is a science fiction movie. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Life, which was a film I hated from last year with Jake Gyllenhaal and Ryan Reynolds.
Is that the one with the thing that gets into the spaceship they all think it can't possibly hurt them, and of course it eats all of them?
Yes.
Spoiler alert!
Exactly. That was one of the worst films from last year.
We're happy to spoil movies that sucked. Yes.
This one reminded me a bit of that, but only in setting. I mean, it's almost like saying a crime drama reminds you of another crime drama because there's a bank robbery. Sure, I mean, a group of people on a space station and there's something bad happening, it's going to remind you of Alien or Life. But this one is much better than Life. It kept me pretty glued to the screen. The tension is definitely there. You've got a great cast like David Oyelowo. You've got Daniel Brühl. You also have Chris O'Dowd, who's great in everything. And Zhang Zi, who was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon all those years ago, is in this as well. The movie is very difficult to describe without getting into spoilers, but I will say it involves time travel and different dimensions. So if you're already checked out with time travel and different dimensions, don't watch Cloverfield Paradox. Watch the first one.
But do you have to have seen the first two to see the third one?
Absolutely not. And what I love about this franchise, I can't think of another franchise or anthology that has done what this one has, besides the surprising the audience nature of it, which is really cool in the way of always having trailers and knowing what's going on. It's nice to be surprised by a major studio. But the other thing I like is all three of these films are different genres. The first film is a monster movie. It's a Godzilla movie. The second film is a thriller. You've got somebody chained in your basement. The third movie is a science fiction film in space. Completely different genres. And I like that a lot.
Wow.
This is getting some negative reviews online, which I'm surprised about because I liked the acting. I liked all the questions. It doesn't answer everything. I think there'll be more Cloverfield movies. And Bear McCreary, who is a film score composer and television score composer who works, I think, most notably on Walking Dead, does the score here. And I think it's the best stuff he's ever done.
All right. Now, you may have said this, and I apologize if I'm asking you to repeat yourself. Did the first two movies, were they made directly for Netflix, or were they big screen movies?
They were big screen movies. Yeah. 2008, that was a big screen movie. And then 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Okay. So the first one made enough money for them to want to make a sequel.
Yes.
The second one made enough movie that they wanted to make a sequel.
Yes.
But they didn't make it for the big screen and went to Netflix. Why?
Well, to be constantly surprising to people, and this has come out just in the last couple of hours, if not in the last day, they've announced that the third Cloverfield film that we heard that there was going to be a third theatrical movie, will be released later on this year. But now it's the fourth one because they gave us an extra one on Netflix that nobody knew about.
Wow.
I know. It's an incredible business model here, and it seems to be working because of all the buzz, and it doesn't hurt that the movies are pretty good. Get this, the fourth one, which does not have a title yet, is released in November of this year on the big screen, and it's going to be set in World War II. Again, another genre, it's a war movie.
All right, what do you give the Cloverfield Paradox on a scale of 10?
I give this an 8.
All right.
Yeah.
More of the Showbiz Show right after this on the Big 550 KTRS. Edition of the Paul Harris Show, the final one here on the Big 550 KTRS. Next hour, the Harris Challenge and Knuckleheads in the News, and I'll tell you a few more stories from my 40-year radio career before we wrap things up. Meanwhile, Max and I are doing the Showbiz Show in this hour. We've already reviewed Cloverfield Paradox on Netflix, which Max gave an 8 out of 10. We also reviewed 50 Shades Freed and Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, both of which will be on the big screen this weekend, and each of which we gave a 5 to. And we have not seen 1517 to Paris, the new Clint Eastwood action movie that is opening up this weekend as well. Now, on to some other things. We were talking about a movie on Netflix, and we've talked quite a bit and speculated quite a bit about this deal where Disney says that they're going to pull some of their stuff off of Netflix. But this week there was a very confusing report, and maybe you can help me understand this, Max, that Disney has a deal with Netflix that ends up covering movies that they have released in theaters from 2016 through this year, and they can't move those off to a Disney-only platform until 2020. So that includes some of your Star Wars movies and some others. And at the same time, you've got the Pixar movies. Everything that gets on the big screen in 2019 and beyond, Disney will then hold for its own online streaming service.
And their streaming service launches in 2019, right? So they would have to leave Rogue One and things like that for a year on Netflix.
And some of the other projects that they've done over the last few years as well.
That's only a year.
So you're going to get a year, maybe 2 years of some crossover there. But people were saying, oh, this thing's going to be horrible for Netflix. I don't think so, because Netflix is getting so much more attention for their own new streaming projects. Well, and even besides that, the vast majority of stuff that people watch on Netflix now is not the new original streaming content, and it's not older movies. It's TV shows.
You know, it's TV shows. People can go to brand new TV shows on Hulu. People use that one. People can watch older genre stuff on Amazon. That's how I use that for Netflix. People watch Netflix original programming, whether it's 13 Reasons Why or whether it's things like Cloverfield Paradox.
But they also watch Friends.
Right, sure.
Because you can binge watch every episode on there, or Breaking Bad, and I'm just giving examples of older shows that were on TV, and even if you've seen them, my daughter has watched every episode of 30 Rock 11 times on Netflix.
Netflix has done a great job curating their own programming, stuff like Bright, the Will Smith movie that everybody, all the critics hated it, but it's made them a ton of money, apparently. It's gotten them a lot of subscribers, and everybody was streaming it. They've signed deals with Woody Allen and with Adam Sandler.
Yeah, that Woody Allen deal done. That was Amazon, by the way.
That was Amazon,
not Netflix.
Oh, I thought Netflix got.
No, he did that Crisis and Six Scenes thing for Amazon, and said, I don't know anything about this. And wow, they were horrible.
My overall point is that
if anybody watched it, they doubled the viewership.
Wow. Netflix wouldn't care if Disney leaves, is my point, because as you point out, people are using Netflix for different things than just, I want to watch the latest Disney film. I've seen a lot of reports say that the Disney model is going to bust, that people are not going to pay for their streaming service. But I think if you look at all the IPs, the intellectual properties that they own, whether it's Muppets or Star Wars or Marvel movies or just their own Disney animated classics, there's no way it's not going to do gangbusters business. This doesn't launch until 2019. Paul, I would pay $9.99 a month starting today just to have the service in 2019.
You see, I'm different from you because I don't care about watching any of the Marvel stuff if I don't have to review it for the show.
Or
the Star Wars stuff. I don't care. Right. You know, I would be upset if I could never see the Pixar movies. But you know what? I like going to see those in the theater anyway because of the beautiful palette that the Pixar animators use. It's so much better on the big screen. Plus, I don't have a little kid around the house anymore, so we're not going to watch the movie 42 times every day.
Yeah. True. Good point.
So it's nothing that I'm going to do. And I don't have any of the other over-the-top services, CBS, All Access.
No, I don't have any of the ones that are network TV. I mean, the three that we mentioned there, Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix, is all that I've got.
Well, there's also a question about what Disney's going to do with their ESPN platform. Because they say ESPN Plus, which is going live this spring, and it'll cost $4.99 a month, will essentially feature thousands of programming from some of the leagues like Major League Baseball and Major League Soccer and the NHL, but it won't include Monday Night Football. You won't be able to watch that on there. And mostly what you're going to be watching are things that are from the past. You won't be watching as much live sports. For instance, ESPN.
That's not going to work.
ESPN carries the four tennis majors, which my wife and I DVR and watch for those 2 weeks four times a year. You will not be able to get those on the app, which is interesting because right now you can watch those things. My wife was able to watch, for instance, the U.S. Open in the afternoon on her computer at work, even watching some of the courts that were not on ESPN or ESPN2, she watched it on the ESPN3 streaming service.
Huh.
So what's going to happen to those things, and what's going to happen in the future, and how much what they call high-quality original content can they do? How many 30 for 30 films can you continue making when you're already well past the original 30 you said you were going to make?
The two avenues that streaming services have not been able to crack as of yet are live news, live and local news, and sports. Because people want those things to be live.
Even though Amazon and Twitter have tried carrying Thursday Night Football, and they may get a few people watching here and there, but it's nothing compared to the broadcast numbers. Now, while we're talking about online streaming, Ken Levine is a guy who's a Hollywood writer and producer who worked on some minor TV shows you might have heard of called MASH, Cheers, and Frasier.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. He also worked on Wings. You know, the kind of shows that are rerunning forever and that people still binge watch on Netflix.
Yeah.
He wrote a piece recently about whether this is the end of the quirky comedy era. Mm. Now that Netflix has canceled TV shows like the Tig Notaro series, One Mississippi, and the Maria, what's her name? Maria starts with a B. I can't remember. She had a show called Lady Dynamite.
Yeah, the Target lady. She did the Target ads for a while. Yeah,
And also there was a series with Kevin Bacon on it called I Love Dick. Mm-hmm. These were all Netflix series that Netflix recently canceled. And people were like, how can they cancel? This is quality TV. How can you cancel them? There's only one possible answer for that, and that is no one was watching. And as he points out in his column, and here's a guy who says that he worked on Cheers for all those years and he loves the residuals, but he finds out that more people have been watching his old Cheers episodes in reruns than were watching originals of House of Cards.
Wow.
Now, if that's the case, he says, how paltry must the numbers be for something like Lady Dynamite?
Sure.
You know, you can get people to watch Netflix if you put on something new, like the new updated version of One Day at a Time. But even that's not going to do as much as reruns of Two Broke Girls.
Well, and same thing with Fuller House. I know it's doing very well, but so are reruns of Full House.
Right. Now, that aside, I want to move on to one last thing today. A great piece I found on mentalfloss.com about actors who hated their own films. For instance, Sylvester Stallone, who says, quote, I made some awful movies, truly awful. Like Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. That was the worst. If you ever want someone to confess to murder, just make him or her sit through that film. They'll confess to anything after 15 minutes.
Nice.
That's Sly Stallone. You probably know this about Alec Guinness, Obi-Wan Kenobi from Star Wars.
Sure.
He says, apart from the money, I regret having embarked on the film. Yep. I like them well enough, but it's not an acting job. The dialogue is lamentable, and it keeps being changed and only slightly improved, and I find myself old and out of touch with the young.
Yeah.
In his autobiography called A Positively Final Experience, he says, he tells a story about a fan who came up to him wanting an autograph, who said, I've watched it more than 100 times. I love that movie. And Guinness said, I will give you this autograph, but you have to promise me to never watch that terrible movie again.
That's awesome.
Bob Hoskins was asked, what's the worst job you've ever done? And he said, Super Mario Brothers.
Yep.
And he said, okay, if you could edit your past, what would you change? I wouldn't do Super Mario Brothers. George Clooney, when he made Batman and Robin,
bad movie.
Remember the breastplate with nipples?
Sure, of course.
He says, I think that movie might have killed the franchise.
It did.
It did for a little while.
It did, yeah.
But then it came back. Katherine Heigl, who was in Knocked Up, the Judd Apatow movie, which she starred with Seth Rogen.
That's a funny movie.
Made a lot of money, and by the way, made her a movie star.
For a day.
Well, she's done a lot of movies since then.
Yeah, but they haven't been successful.
But in the next 4 or 5 years, she got a lot of work.
Yeah, oh sure. Yeah.
She says, that movie's sexist. It paints us as shrews, as humorless and uptight, and it paints the men as lovable, goofy, fun-loving guys. Yeah, those were the characters in that movie, Catherine, not all men and all women. Charlize Theron says she hated doing reindeer games with Ben Affleck and Gary Sinise. It was just not a good movie. John Cusack says Better Off Dead was the worst thing he's ever seen and would never trust the film's director again.
Oh, I like that movie.
And then, of course, the classic of these is Christopher Plummer, who, of course, was Von Trapp in Colonel Von Trapp in The Sound of Music. He says that when he was asked to participate in a 2005 film reunion, he referred to the film as The Sound of Mucus and said, no thanks, I have no interest in that. I never liked that movie.
Wow.
Apparently it was a little bit too syrupy for him.
It's pretty syrupy, but he's great in it.
And that's our showbiz stuff. The final time around, until we can make other arrangements, which may come down the pike at some point, but not now, nothing to announce. He's Max, I'm Paul. This is the Big 550 KTRS.